I'm the darling of Dior. They tell me H-line is hot. The women all hate me. The fellows all date me. Though this fashion quite cancels me bot. Said a lad in the Louvre, she looked like a Hoover. What's happened to Chasse, mon Dieu? Then a painter from Pisa, standing by Mona Lisa, looked at her, then at me, and said, ooh. Oh, Mr. Dior, why do you make us so queer? You've exposed our poor knees. Now we all look like trees. It's enough to send us on the beyond. So Saint-Périen to your passions. Combien do we have to look dumb? Très bien if our faces are lifted. But to heck with this dropping the tom.
What happened was, Louis Elie Manon to the Gaiety. And when he tapped Jimmy O'Dea on the pantomimes, if they were stuck, he used to say, Annie, will you go up and give them a hand? And therefore, all my life, I was in and out of that Gaiety. And I learned a lot, you know, that way, you know, going from one theatre to the other, which was fabulous. But then she left, and Miss Cafferty left, and I went in altogether. And I made all the costumes now. Babs DeMonte designed them. Sadie and myself learned a terrible lot from Babs, because Babs was a continental designer. She used to sketch everything, beautiful, colour them in, all the sketches, and then we'd show them to Maureen. And past Maureen, that was okay. Past any other big star to come in, it'd be okay. Because as long as I made the costumes exactly like that picture, then it was perfect. But I had great help with my daughter, Sadie, because she went to the Grafton Academy and the College of Art for design and pattern making. So she used to make master patterns for me. You know what I mean? And when you cut out with Sadie's patterns, you don't have any alterations. We make them straight off. We don't even fit. We wait until the costumes are finished and then we try them on. And you might only have to nip the waist in here and there, which was brilliant. And that's how we used to do the shows. Because sometimes you'd only get 3 weeks. You go down, maybe you'd be up in the water, and I'd say to Paz, what the hell are they doing now? Down, have they changed anything? And I'd go down, well, what's for the finale? Oh, we haven't got decided yet. Now, this would be 3 weeks before the flipping show go off. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go away. There's worse to come. Wait till you hear the next one. Well, Ian Priestley Mitchell, the decent fella, he says, Joe, think of a new song for the next one. So I said, right, a brand new one I've never sung before, The Soldier's Dream. Out on the plain, the weary soldiers now were sleeping, lulled to sleepy as the wicked sharpie blows. And on the plain they found the newbie sang a creeping, and the sentinel is pacing to and fro. All at once the sky is filled with shapes of horsemen, lit up by lightning as the dying day goes down. And the famous white horse is directing the course to renown. See them pass on, those hussars, those hussars. Triumphant story, Uriah,
isn't upon. There we go. Sadie, it's us. And Francis. Huh?
How are
you? This is Sadie, my daughter, and that's Francis.
How are you?
Her assistant. There. Oh, that's doing a great thing down there, you know what I mean?
Good.
See, they're up to their neck in pantomime.
They're doing the pantomime?
This is the costumes for pantomime now.
And so she's going to start running out against time as ever. Christmas is a bad time for all of us.
Mm-hmm. You design all the things yourself, Sadie?
Yeah, well, a lot at a time now. Some of them come in from England, but I do design for Panto.
Yeah.
And we make everything here, yeah. And the operas.
And the operas,
yeah. Both, yeah.
This is not your old wardrobe.
No, this is not my wardrobe at all. This is Sadie's wardrobe. I have nothing to do with this blinking place at all. Mine was upstairs, up over there. All the offices are up there. You know, I always thought my wardrobe was better than looking than this. It's better looking. My wardrobe upstairs, Francis, better looking than this. But how Sadie started was, Sadie was one of the Royal Oldtons as a child. And when she came to 14 years of age, she used to say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I want to go to the College of Art and I want to do costume. So we said yes. So she went to the College of Art and then she went to the Grafton Academy for pattern making. You know, and that's how she done the pattern. But she is a master cutter. You know what I mean?
What's a master cutter?
A master cutter is a person who cuts and there's not much alterations. That's a master cutter. You know what I mean? And she makes her own patterns for everything. You see, but Sadie made all Maureen's costumes to save me the trouble. You know what I mean? Only for that I would never got through, you know, what I should have done. You know what I mean? Although I'd done the whole Annie show and Sadie gave me a hand at that time. Wasn't that right, Sadie?
That's right,
Sadie. And she gave me a hand. I don't know how I'd done that. I'd done the Annie show from snaps. One of the fellas was to come over here and do all that. But whatever happened, I don't know, whatever, might be in a bit of trouble. But he sent over snaps of the whole show in London. And I worked from that show, from them snaps, for to do all that. And the men's stuff was made by a tailor in Manor Street called Penders. But all the rest was mine. I said, Sadie done the secretary. Beautiful costume for the secretary. Do you remember, like, a black one with white?
Yeah.
All done beautiful. So Sadie done more, like a good few of them and gave me a hand. I wouldn't have been able to put it on or
so the whole pantomime from photographs?
Yeah, it had to be copied from photographs. It was a set piece, and so they each Annie that was ever on in any part of the world were identical. Yeah. From America to London to everywhere, so they had to be copied identical. And otherwise, all Mammy had was photographs. They had to be exactly the same. To get used to working from that. Photographs or sketches, you have to. The only main difficulty to do with theatre is it's always against time. With everybody, with every department. With every department, it's always against time.
Yeah.
We're always kind of... We never have enough time. I think if we had a year, we still wouldn't have enough time. It's always the way. We never have enough time.
Yeah. Do you remember one night we were slipping in by the stage door, Harry? There was a queue down the street as far as Mercer's.
Yeah.
And there, looking up at the poster, was a wee small man with a battered old bowler hat and a pram in front of him. You remember what he said?
Glory be, twice nightly, Jimmy O'Dea and Harry O'Donovan at the Gaiety. The Gaiety has gone to hell. We shall now take the case of James Phelan Plummer versus Mrs. Mulligan Widow for breach of promise. Call the plaintiff.
Mrs. Mulligan!
Mrs. Mulligan!
Mrs. Mulligan!
Ah, but where would you see a fine woman like me? Biddy Mulligan, the pride of the coop. Me boys, Biddy Mulligan, the pride of the coop.
Oh, silence, woman, silence. Quiet, please.
Ah, how are you, Judge? Put it there. It's a long time since I've seen you. You're looking smashing. Did you get over your operation?
Be quiet, please.
I'm only talking to this gent here. Pardon yourself.
Quiet, please, madam.
It's all right, your worship. It's all right. I'm talking to the gent here with the red cloak and the purple nose.
How dare you, woman?
Now, maybe it's indigestion. I do suffer myself sometimes. It's something awful.
Madam,
when I'm in my little fish shop, the folks don't call me madam.
Well, you're not in your fish shop now.
Oh, well, there's enough old cards present to make me think I was.
My lord.
That's only a joke, my lord.
Quiet.
My lord, I appear for the defendant, Lawrence Phelan, plumber by profession.
Plumber by inclination. Oh, what I went through with that fellow over there is nobody's business, day in and day out.
No, all right.
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
What sort of an idiot did he take me for?
Well, there was one funny incident. There was a pantomime on, and there was Eugene Lambert, Hal Roach, Danny Cummins, and somebody else, and I can't remember offhand. But they wanted a ballet dress. Now, we just made the ordinary with the net skirt down to the ankle, something like that. But Fred O'Drummond said, oh, no, I want the really, real regular tutus.
That was very, very funny. It was a send-up of the ballet. They were in tutus, and they were. And if you ever saw more incongruous people, I mean, Cecil Nash, 6'4", Danny Cummins, about 5'4", Milo Shea, whose hairy chest showed through the tutu, showed through the costume, and Hal Roach with the glasses, myopic, who couldn't see past the end of the stage. And they danced to the Sugar Plum Fairy. You know, they did a ballet to the Sugar with Maureen as the matador. The only one in a male costume was Maureen, and she was the only female. And it was quite funny.
I forget the name of the pantomime, but I remember being a matador with the three-cornered hat and the waistcoat. I think I have it inside. And it was great fun. It was a ballet, you know, with the red cape and the comics, Eugene Lambert, you know, and Hal Roach. And my God, Milo Shea, I think, was in it too. And this, to see them gambling around the stage in annals, tutus, pink tutus, was something else.
And I said, dear God, tonight, how can we make regular tutus at this hour of the night? You know what I mean? Anyway, it took us 2 days to make the 4 tutus pink with sequin bodies. And Maureen was doing the matador, you know. And we had to make her a sequin top and everything. They were the ballet, and they were doing the ballet, and she was doing the matador. I don't know how we'd done it, but at 4 o'clock in the morning, both machines sat down. They were overheated. But he was delighted with the result the next day. I mean, it was really fabulous. I wonder where the hell them tutus are now. It was great. All night long, Sacred Heart to God, I say, crying out loud. Lovely stage, isn't it? Huh? Real lovely stage, you know. Oh, mind yourself, love, yeah. There you are. If any of the curtains went wrong, you know, or tearing them, I used to have to spend hours here on the stage mending them, because they used to fly them down, you know what I mean, and there. But when you look, it's lovely when you're looking from here, isn't it? You know? I always loved this theatre. I worked at the Theatre Royal for 20 years, and that held 4,000 people. And I just thinking if it was there now, it would do a bomb. At least I imagine it would. But my daughter Sadie here up at the wardrobe says no, that this hell holds 2,000, a little over 2,000. But it's a beautiful theatre, isn't it? Really beautiful theatre, yeah. When I looked at it, at first now it was... The rain used to come in through the flipping roof, you know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, I'd have to go up, Mr. Cairns used to say, bring a bucket off to the Grand Circle and put it under one of the seats where the rain would be coming in, you know, where the ceiling was very bad. It's fabulous now, isn't it? Well, people sit out there, they say, and they see all the glamour. You know, but the glamour is outside, but the glamour is not backstage. You know, it's hard work, even from the stagehands, the stage doorman, everybody, the wardrobe especially, the artists rehearsing, everybody. It's all hard work until it's all put together. sink I had downstairs, you know. Upstairs, I mean, just the bloody sink. Old-fashioned, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Your pizza, that pizza press, taking it out, trying to bloody well ring it open, the little ringer there, you know what I mean, the little roller ringer. Let me tell you the hard bloody work he had to do and all that. No dryers, no washing machine, no nothing. We managed. We had a Spanish company here called Pilar Lopez Spanish Company, and of course they couldn't believe that we hadn't any washing machine here. They used to send everything out to the laundry to be done, and the kind of underskirt they have, they were all full of starch, and when they washed them, the whole underskirt was full of holes. Can you make a picture? Trying to use spray starch to fill up them holes that's in them underskirt was unbelievable, you know. But they managed to. Said we were ancient. When you look into it, we were ancient, weren't we? But we got on, Grant. That's how our hands are so hard and so, you know what I mean? You're using your hands so much that you have no arthritis in them. The muscles are grand. Now let out the plug. There you are. Great. One wash done. Home and dried. Isn't it? Home and dried, and that's it.
As far as the wardrobe were concerned, I was the natural enemy. And in the case of Anne O'Cuff, who was, in my opinion, Anne O'Cuff and Babs DeMont, were the greats of theatre wardrobe. There was nobody like them. They were first class. But the situation was that when we'd start rehearsing a variety show like Gales of Laughter, we set out, after about 7 days rehearsal, we'd set out about six sketches. I'd then go to Anna and say, these are the sketches, these are the costumes I require. And being Anna, she'd be working on them instantly. Of course, 7 days later, we'd have all changed our minds.
I remember one time, it was Jimmy O'Dea's, it was Fred O'Donovan's. And we used to be rehearsing Christmas Eve. And they were looking for, it was that time, looking for a goose costume. And it wasn't made, and I thought it was props. So I had to stay half Christmas Eve night trying to make a flipping goose costume out of nothing. I couldn't find feathers, so I found a bit of net. But I'd done for the dress rehearsal, you know what I mean? Betty Longby in the corner there, you know. She was stage director. And you'd say, tell Anna that, you know, I want this and I want that. But sometimes they'd be rehearsing and Betty'd come up. Betty Blount was great, and she'd come up and say, don't do that, it'll be out. you know, choose to give me the nod, and then we wouldn't touch it. Babs Lamont and I'd be up to our necks with it. She said, don't put that in, it'll be out. Which I just said, thank God. Do you know what I mean? Then it took that much off me altogether, you know.
So there was usually an intense hatred built up between us. And it went on and on and on like that. But we both had a healthy respect for each other. And I understood how frustrating it was for them.
The two of them actually loved to spark off each other. I have to say that. I mean, she had really got respect for Fred as the producer, right? And he had respect for her as the wardrobe, but you could never actually say it to each other. They always had arguments, but...
And that table got a bloody good lot of thumps. He thumped the table and I thumped it back. And we kept thumping and thumping and thumping and say, you're finished now.
You know? She chose, you'll get it when it's ready.
Or I tell you about Fred O'Donnelly, come up and he'd be all over you. Now, really all over you. You know what I mean? And this and the other, and he might have a mug of tea or something like that. And he'd go down onto the stage and he'd tear something on the stage and he'd come up like a bloody tiger. You know, thumping the table and until he got away with it. Every thump he'd done, I'd thump back. And that's what happened to him, you know. They were doing a show down in Belfast on for BBC and I didn't want to go. And he said, you are going to dance this, you know. And I said, no, I am not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not.
And she went.
I ended off going, you know what I mean.
I had visions of her standing at the bottom of the stairs shouting abuse at me at the top of the stairs, which was a regular occurrence, you know. So truthfully, I'm very fond of Anne O'Coff. But, you know, it was one of these things where when you're putting on a production, it's tension for everybody. But the wardrobe got the worst tension, in my opinion. They really had the toughest time. But no, I always respected them because it was, number one, it was an area I knew nothing about. Number two, it was an area that I caused them most of the problems they had. And number three, it was an area where they kept prices low and they really did a great job. I mean, it was under terrible circumstances because the Gaiety wardrobe was not an ideal wardrobe. You know, and bear in mind, they had to wash the costumes every day. They had to wash and dry and iron and everything, even when the show was working. So everybody went on with fresh, sparkling costumes. And in a pantomime, you're talking about maybe 300 costumes. You know, they were the hardest workers. They and the backstage, in my opinion, were the hardest workers in the theatre.
Don't be silly, it's not breaking. It's just the pilot testing his flaps. Testing his what? His flaps.
His flaps. I mean to say...
Wouldn't you think he could have done that before he got on the plane?
Isn't that the driver? I wonder where he's going.
Probably going to have his blackout.
His blackout!
Hey, Mr. Turn him down! Why are you standing up there?
Now, what seems to be the trouble?
It's obvious what's the trouble. You're standing up right there. We're going along like that. What are you doing standing there? Who's pressing the buttons to pull the thing?
Yeah, we're going through the cars. What happens when we come to the traffic lights?
Now, there's nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about.
Did you feel that?
Yeah.
Did you go bump?
I went bump. You went bump.
We both went bump.
That's all right. We just hit an air pocket.
Well, you shouldn't have hit it, should you? I mean, to say you've been up here before, you should know where it is.
The cutter, unless you have a good cutter, costume is nothing. It's nothing. You have to have a good cutter and you have to have a good maker up. You know what I mean? And then when you fit, if it fits perfect, you've no bother. So there, that saves hours and hours of work. You know, as I just said, with Sadie cutting, you know what I mean, or even making the patterns for me. She used to make the master patterns. And I'd cut, even the men's, I'd be able to cut from the pattern, the men's stuff and everything. Well, her costume shows off the artist is doing, and she's not dressed unless she has a good costume. She has to feel, such as Maureen. Maureen has to feel the costume is right. She has to. Otherwise, it upends her when she'd come out on the stage to know the people is all looking. And if the costume is not her, you know what I mean? It has to be her. Or any artist, any one I made for, the costume has to be their personality. Otherwise, I mean, they'd stand in front of maybe somebody had tittered something. But we always made sure nobody ever tittered, you know. And Babson did sit out there. She was a costume designer at that time, you know. And she knew what would look right from the stage. She knew what colours went over, what colours did not. You know, she had the feel of the colours, you know what I mean? And she'd know what the audience would say, oh, that's, you know what I mean? No one ever had to say that her costumes weren't perfect. I mean, as I said, a lot of people said to me, oh, they're hired. I'm telling you now, there's no costume hired. It's all made in the Gaiety Theatre wardroom. Except in Jimmy O'Dea's days, his early days, he used to get all the costumes from Howard and Wyndham. And they were beautiful. They come in caskets. And you'd have two keys to a box. You know what I mean? So that each key was different, so that they would never be stolen or anything like that, you know, coming over. But those costumes were a work of art. Now, you learned a lot from looking at them too. But Babs Lamont, you travelled all over the world and she knew costumes. And she sit out there and really now, to be quite honest, she didn't get the credit she deserved. But she was brilliant. Nobody could take it from her. Nobody could take it from her. And that's the idea of a costume. It makes you. Look at now, you get a suit and it didn't look right. You're all upended, aren't you? Well, a costume is a costume, and that's their personality.
We always called Annie Cuff Anno. I don't know why. I think it came with her from the Royal. But she was an Anno. She wasn't an Annie. Anno Cuff. I couldn't dream of calling her Annie Cuff. Anno. Yes. I think she brought it with her from the Royal, and I don't know who christened her Anno in the Royal. There weren't any other Annos, you know, just the one, Cuff. I was known as the Velcro Queen, you know, kind of every time I went off. But Rosie Walsh did all that. She did all the quick changing. 15 seconds you had to change, you know. But Anna would make them so they were easy to change out of. All the Velcro, no buttons, no hooks and eyes, no nothing, which was great.
Now you have the beauty Indians with the tomahawks and the spears. Above was royal peel as the heroes of ancient years. And also I might mention the British grenadiers. Sure none of them was in it with the double of fusiliers. You have the belt, the light brigade, and of the days they done. And of the under regiments, who many a victory won. But the pride of all the armies, dragoons or carabineers, was a noble band of warriors. They done, fusiliers. Don't expect right turn of the face. This is the way we go. Charge him with fixed bayonets, the terror of every foe. The glory of old Ireland has filled his buccaneers. And a terror to creation war. Day, double and fusiliers. You heard about the war between the Russians and the Brits. The Tsar one day was reading an old copy of Tidbits. When the general came to him and flung himself down in tears. Says he, we'll be defeated, here's the double and fusiliers. The Tsar began to tremble and bit his underlip.
Begorra, boys, says he, I think it's time we took the tip. Them buckles comes from Dublin, and to judge by what I hear is the divils of militia men. They double the fusiliers on the slip.
Then one day, Jimmy came to me with a great idea.
You mean you came to me with a great idea?
Oh, actually, we had the same idea simultaneously.
Why not do a pantomime?
A pantomime for Christmas. And so recklessly and flushed with success.
Speak for yourself, Harry.
We decided to do a pantomime, any pantomime.
What about Dear Little Red Riding Hood?
Or Babes in the Wood.
Can you see me as the Widow Twankey, a real swanky twanky?
Aladdin would be too difficult. We could try Jack and the Beanstalk.
So the Beanstalks were in season round Christmas, what? Which I doubt very much, but still...
The trouble was that there was simply no place in Dublin or the country either where we could lay hands on suitable scenery. Once again, we were up a gum tree, and then one day, I spotted an advertisement in the...
Tell you the truth, Logan Bourke would come up and he'd say, I've a board meeting downstairs and I don't want any noise. Now, I'd be working, getting on one of the shows or anything, and I'd take the thread out of the needle and everything, and I'd put my foot on that machine and it'd go all the time. So they had to get out of the boardroom and go somewhere else for the meeting, because I was damn well not going to stop the flipping machine to suit them and that bloody board meeting, to be quite honest.
We had a board meeting and there was a thumping away of the machine, and they said to me, what's going on? And I said, well, there should be nothing going on. And I said, I'll go up and see, because we're not making costumes. We're halfway into the run. And I went up, and there was Anno in the throes of making a costume for Jack Cruz, the Olympian. So, I mean, she was caught red-handed doing something she shouldn't do, but I mean, I didn't care. Jack was a good friend, and if she was helping him out. But it was funny the way she was caught. Here's the whole board in the place.
When I went into the Royal, I had £4, 10 shillings wages. Of course, that was a long time ago, you know what I mean? When I went off to the Gaiety then, I had 9 shillings. And it used to drive me mad. I'd go in, say, at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'd had, out of that 9 shillings, I would have to buy my lunch and my tea. And I said to myself, you know, out of 9 shillings, where the hell? I used to have nothing left. And I remember Miss McManus, she was the secretary. And she came up 2 weeks before Christmas and said, I'm afraid, Mrs. Cuff, she said, that you'll have no wages for the next 2 weeks. She said, why? Because she said, you owe tax. How could I owe tax? You're doing it. You're doing all that. I don't know, she said, but you'll have no wages for the next 2 weeks. I didn't tell her nearly past her, because we're depending on it. You know what I mean? Because sometimes my husband wasn't working. So I rebelled anyway. And I went to the union, and the union came up. And they said, well, you either want the best or you don't. Now, if you want the best, give Mrs. Cuff her rise. And if you don't want the best, then let her go. But I got £20 then. So that was a big jump up, like, from £9.
But we were never let down. That's the important part. In all the history of Mrs. Cuff, Anno Cuff at the Gaiety, she never let us down. Now, trying to pin her down was like chasing mice at a crossroads, you know, like you could never pin her down to saying she'd have the thing ready, but she always had it ready. You know, she never failed. We've never had one instance, and certainly in the 20 years I was involved in the Gaiety, I could never turn around and say I had to hire a costume because Anna Cuff didn't make it. She always had it ready. Herself and Babs Demont were just two miracle people.
We had a Ouija board. I was in the Royal now. you see, with yes and no and a Tumbleliner in the middle. And Ursula Doyle's mother and Jimmy O'Dea's mother-in-law and myself and another May Phelan and Lily Egan. And Lily Egan took down anything that was said. Of course, you could push the tumbler to where the hell you wanted to go, you know what I mean? And one of the men came up on the stage, asked him what'll win the second race. And I said, well, if you put money on the third horse, you should do well. And it came in. And I was only out of the blue, you know. And then Mayfield said, Phil Donahue was away, you know, he was the manager of the Gaiety at that time. And he was away and he said, when will he be back? And I said, the right time, which was the right time. He came back when he should have came back. You know what I mean? All these things. And it must have been 12 o'clock when we looked up at the skylight. There was dark and a full moon coming. And I said, oh God, we won't do it anymore. Went up to the Gaiety then and Father Nolan came in. And he must have heard about the Ouija board. And in he came, come on. Show me this Ouija board. The devil is there. The devil is there. This is what it is. Give me that Ouija board. And he took the Ouija board. But we didn't do it anymore. Father Nolan was coming and said, I got that Ouija board and I burnt it, you know. But we've never done it again, you know what I mean.
My heart is broken, but what care I? Such pride inside me has woken. I'll try my best not to cry by and by, when the final farewells must be spoken. I'll join the Legion, that's what I learned, in some far distant region, where human hearts are staunch and true.
Well, I remember one show very much in my memory, and I often think about it now. Joseph Locke and Mae Devitt, and we were doing Showboat. Now, they were looking for some people for chorus, and of course, I couldn't go. Some of them came up and asked me, could I go? Connie Ryan said, could I go in? But I was expecting Sadie at the time, and I couldn't. I remember it so well because they used to come up Grafton Street, all through O'Connor Street, all up Grafton Street and all round the Stevens Green in a carriage, an open carriage. And the two of them would be there, Mae Devitt and Joseph Locke. And they were really a great team together. The voices blended in and that's what I love. I love anything like that and Mae Devitt was great. And then she'd done a good few shows with him, you know, with Joseph Locke. And he was a great man, really, you know what I mean, and very kind and I really loved him. You know, I used to always wish I could stand on the stage and sing, you know, but costumes was my life and that was it, you know. But I hope to sing at the end of your programme. I could give you a beat.
Come to centre stage, yeah. And I'll hold the mic.
You hold the mic, yeah. It won't be easy. You think it's strange when I try to explain how I feel, that I need your love after all I have done. All you have to do is look at me to know that every word is true. Don't cry for me, Argentina. The truth is I've never left you. All through my wild days, my mad existence, I kept my promise. Don't keep your distance. Down here in the dark, you know what I mean? Tried to put the lights on as I went along, you know, in the dark. I spent most of my life there, though my two daughters were grown up before I really, you know, when I left the Royal, they were really grown up at the time. So it was. My husband was there looking after me, and my sisters and all, so it was no problem, you know. Because people might say, if you have children, what, you spend so many hours. But you don't if you have a family that looks after them. You know what I mean? So, and they're grown up like they're not babies. I wouldn't leave them on babies, you know. Now, this is the prompt side. We always, Maureen would always stand here for our entrance. And we might stand there, come down and look and see was everything fine, you know. But see what I look up there, look at it. You know, the memories come back to me, you know. I often sit in bed and say, how long more have I got? How long more have I got to live? And every morning I wake up and I'd say, thank you, God, for another day. If you don't want me, well, then don't take me. I have too much work to do.
And so I go to fight a savage foe.
Of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.